What's up, everyone? We are back with another episode of The Broke Come Up. I am Marquise.
And this is Marcus. I miss y'all.
Yeah, we took some time off. You know, life happens. And so we had to take a little bit of time off. But we're back. And I think this is going to be a very good welcome back episode.
Definitely.
Yeah, so we how has your week been? What have you been doing?
Week's been good. You know, it's kind of been a hodgepodge of things. I've had a few deadlines to meet, you know, with some job related things and, you know, that kind of thing. So that was done. But on the other part, just being creative, I have some curricular things that I've been doing, you know, trying to be ahead of, you know, what's going on now in terms of education and this whole thing about, well, where is it going? Are we going to do the hybrid form of stuff? Is it going to be traditional? Is it right. going to be an online at-home learning environment? Trying to merge the best of both worlds, you know, with that, you know. But yeah, other than that, just really been cooling and relaxing for the most part this weekend. How about yourself?
I feel you. Same. I've been pretty busy. You know, I'm always trying to find a hustle and I've been hustling, doing, working like, you know, there's no tomorrow. So I've been kind of getting in every time and just kind of looking forward to, you know, relaxing times, times when I can chill out or, you know, just have a drink and
definitely
do some chill stuff. So I'm just trying to balance some things. I think that's where I am like in life. I think now I'm at a point where I'm really about balancing things and
yes,
getting to that space. So I mean, I've been kind of chilling it out, balancing, working hard, hustling, you know, same old, trying to be a smart black man in this street, you know, with a little bit of ratchicity.
Yeah.
You know, you
always have to have that element, you know, that you can have that chip on your shoulder about, you know what I'm saying?
You know, that's what I'm trying to make sure I'm doing. So,
for sure.
Yep. So before we get started, you know, we always talk about our drinks and what are you? Are you on your blend tonight? What are you on?
Well, I switched it up today. You know, so I went over to a bit of a liqueur. You know what I'm saying? You know, you kind of have your cask and cream and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I have kind of a y'all ain't laughing at me. I have a cookies and cream liqueur over here.
Oh.
So, you know, I have a thing for cookies and cream ice cream and you know, even like the Hershey bars, the cookies and cream, that kind of thing. So I found a cookies and cream liqueur that you can just kind of put on the rocks and kind of swivel it a little bit. Delicious, you know what I'm saying? And then the content, you know, alcoholically is up there, so you can get you a nice buzz off of it too. So yeah, so that's what
like
this
one. Four bottles of that stuff, man.
You really don't. It's 17% alcohol. Like it's legit. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
It's legit.
All right, I guess. I mean, I can change it up a little bit, but I think I went back to the norm.
Okay. So
I'm back on my tequila. I have a little bit of soda with it, with some lime juice.
Gotcha.
And a cherry drink. So it's like a nice little, it's a little smooth concoction I made with it. And everything. I need to try or buy some. You know, the way this budget is set up, I don't know if I can. Tequila. Okay. But I've been on my Herradura tequila, so I think I'll just stick with that. But yeah.
Is that an expensive tequila? Is that what you're saying with that?
I wouldn't say it's expensive. I mean, it probably runs around the price of, you know, what you would expect for like a top shelf tequila.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I wouldn't say expensive. I would say maybe in your 45 to 60 range.
Okay.
So, you know, it's not like bad. Now, expensive would be your Clase Azul. That's very expensive.
Oh,
so
know nothing about that.
I had that at a bar once. And thankfully, I didn't have to pay for it because if I did, like, it's very expensive. But it's like the smoothest tequila I've ever tasted.
Yeah.
In my life, it's almost like water.
Yeah, that's probably why.
And you know,
hence you pay so much for it. Yeah,
that's dangerous.
Yeah, it is. And they know that.
Yeah,
and you'll pay for that.
Yeah,
you know. So, You know.
Yeah, so that's cool. But yeah, so today we are actually going to take it back, and we've titled our show Doing It for the Culture.
There we go.
So we're going to discuss a lot of things ranging from the HBCUs, or historically black colleges and universities, mm-hmm. for those that might have been living under a rock and don't know what it is, to Colin Kaepernick, mm-hmm. to our top favorite shows or movies that we're going to also discuss too. So I think this is going to be pretty interesting today. A lot that we can kind of dive into and, you know, reminisce,
right.
be a little nostalgic, but also talk about, you know, kind of what shaped us into, or shapes us into who we are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So our quick hit, or hit it and quit it. I keep saying quick hits. You know, I'm thinking about gambling. I hit it and quit it is we're going to talk about something very special today. Today is June 25th. And 24 years ago, Jay-Z, Sean Carter released Reasonable Doubt. Mm. So that's our Hit It and Quit It segment. Mm. We're going to talk about that, talk about some nice music during that time, because, you know, that was kind of our growing up time. We were feeling ourselves coming into being young men. So what was your thought process, I guess, around that time frame? That was 96.
Oh, man. So 96, you know, and for me being someone who grew up in the Atlanta metro area, you start talking about the Olympics at that time.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So
that is true.
So,
yeah.
So one thing that happened to really bust Atlanta wide open is what we call the Olympification of Atlanta. You know, and that's a Professor Hobbs thing, who you know, talked about that and documented, you know, the Black Mecca, which is Atlanta, or whatever. But it really just, you know, made Atlanta, and we were on our way to being this international city with it. You know, Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport and that kind of thing. But holding an international event like that really kind of put us, you know, in a different realm from that point on. So for me, 96, you know, that was eighth grade, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere within mm-hmm. there. And the music, we just, at that point, Atlanta started to get an identity with the music. You know, you start talking about Dungeon Family. I think at that time, we were what you would call North Miami at that time. A lot of Booty Shake was here. You had Freak Nick.
Yeah, Uncle Luke.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Uncle Luke, Quad City DJ.
It was big. And I think that kind of morphed into, you know, you had your Outkast, your Goody Mob, but we also had our dancing and stuff. You had Ticking, you was ragtopping, you was bouncing, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it really opened up a culture for us to be self-expressive. And I talked about that in previous editions of this, right? But mm-hmm. just that ability for us to be self-expressive. So we were dancing and the music was good. And at that time, Jay-Z came up with the Reasonable Doubt thing and he was very cool with it. You know what I'm saying? I think we had traditionally looked at, you know, New York coming from someone who was a Southerner and, you know, some of the stuff was hardcore. Some of the stuff was very inner city. And a lot of us maybe couldn't relate to
Wu-Tang
that.
Yeah. They were
gut. Right. They was just out there with it. You know what I'm saying? And then Jay-Z comes mm-hmm. in with this Reasonable Doubt. And my track on that was Feeling It, you know what I'm saying? Because it just has such a melodic, laid-back vibe, you know what I'm saying? And I think that was kind of his coming-out party. Like, kind of put him on the map. He was a smooth cat with it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I've always been a Jay-Z fan, you know. It was surprising. I didn't realize I was a Jay-Z fan until I went to the On the Run tour. This was back in, like, 2013, something like that. And, you know, like if anybody had been to that concert, the way they did it was almost like a mixtape. So they mixed in like his song, Beyonce's song, okay. Like they would switch the songs off. And it was just like they would merge like seamlessly, like a theme of his song would merge with the theme of her song or vice versa. And so I didn't realize how many of his old songs I knew until they came on. Like I was going word for word and I'm thinking like, damn, did I really know all of these songs then? And I didn't realize, because I've never been like a rap head.
Yeah, right.
And I would probably say that was actually when I crossed and it came out as Kappa. Mm. That was the song, it wasn't for Reasonable Doubt, but it was Dirt Off Your Shoulders.
Okay,
that was the song I came out with. It was just the first thing. I always like kind of turned to Jay-Z with rap. So I think he definitely, like, I guess, opened my eyes to rap, because I was not a rap person. I wasn't a big Tupac, Snoop, Dr. Dre, you know, those people. Like, yeah. I don't think I can tell you an Eazy-E song.
Gotcha. I gotcha.
You know, so, I mean, but that was, and they said it came out, and to say that came out 24 years ago, like, that really tells our age. Like, it doesn't feel like it was that long ago, to tell you the truth.
It doesn't, but then in a sense it does. And I say that because of just so much that we've been able to be witness to during this time. And I I'll say that just in the example of, like, the cell phone, right? We can remember when, you know, we were young, there was no such thing as a cell phone, right? You had your home lines, you maybe had your cordless phones, you know what I'm saying?
Maybe like 99, right? Like a Nokia,
right? And you had, like, and you had the, either the plan where you had to get off the phone, you know,
about 7 o'clock,
right, or you had to get someone to call back after 9, the free minutes like that, right? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Or you had the, prepaid, you know, minutes or whatever. So, like, we've seen the cell phone from its inception all the way through the, you know, iPhone coming out and the smartphone thing that's going on now, right? And then what it is now. So we've seen, like, a lot technologically and how things have been innovated and changed over that time, and all the politics and all the changes and things that have gone with it. So even though that's been a short span of time, in some sense, there's a lot that's happened, not to speak of the advent of the internet as well during the mid-90s. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
That is true, because, you know, like, during that time, I guess the reason why it has been a while, but I can remember so vividly, like, things about that time frame, or music specifically, because I'm a music person. But I remember when those songs like that would come out, and when we would go to school, you know, like, for our school, you could either go in the gym, or you can go eat breakfast, or you can go into the library.
Yes, right, there we go. And I was
the person that went into the library, you know. But I would go on the computer, and I wouldn't, like, I may do some homework or catch up on some stuff, but for the most part, I would find a computer, and I would, like, but that's when, like, you really couldn't Google wasn't around. Like, I think
not like that. It was
Yahoo, or, like,
yes,
Bing, it was something, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But I just remember, like, looking at the same 5 sites to try and, like, find out all the information I could find on, like, celebrities and, like, the music, or listening to clips of songs.
Right.
Or looking up ringtones. Remember, you could key in, like, the ringtone on your phone?
Yes.
Like, those were things that were, like, really popular for me during that time. And that's why when I think back, yeah, that was over 20 years ago, but I can vividly remember those times. And it just seemed like such a simple time.
It was simple. And I think it was self-expressive. Like, you know, for me being down here in the Atlanta metro area, man, I was dancing. You know, I was dancing, listening to the music and learning stuff or whatever. But it was just a very feel-good time. And a lot of the songs that came out were like therapy. You know what I'm saying? A lot of the things that Outkast had to say at the time, Dungeon Family had to say at the time, a lot of the underground rappers. I mean, we used to do a lot of music from Memphis. I mean, 666 Mafia, people know about, but a lot of people don't know about Playa Fly and Tommy Wright and some of these other underground artists that at the time we were big on. And a lot of it was therapy for us, man. And, you know, it was just a very feel-good time, a time when we were coming into our own and really, feeling empowered, you know, confidence-wise, you know?
Yeah, they definitely made music that, like, it wasn't so hard and shoot them up, kill them, stab them type music, but it was, you know, they had a message, but then they would also dance and party.
Yes.
And it brought me back to, like, even those high school parties. I don't know.
Oh, man.
Like, I remember, like, we used to have high school parties after, like, football games.
Yeah, or boy. Games.
You go to the gym and, like, they would just play, like, the song, and you would sweat for, like, it felt like hours.
Man.
But, like, now that you look at it, it's like 2 hours.
Man.
That you, but, like, the lights would be out in the gym, and everybody was just dancing, having a time.
Man.
You know, like, now, you know, that'll probably be all over the internet someplace within the next 2 minutes after you do
it. Well, I hear you on that, and I just have to put this out here. You know, this swag and surf stuff that is just, I know everyone knows about the swag and surf, but y'all have to know that in the song, they talk about Stevenson High School, and I'm going to put that out there already. because that was where these cats was going. You know what I'm saying? And that's my...
I ain't never listened to the lyrics. Hey, I've never listened to the lyrics of their song.
Hey, man. They talk about Stevenson High School, the Black and Blue Jaguar. You better go back and listen to it.
I mean, I know about Stevenson man, now that I live here, but yeah. I never actually listened.
Yeah, man.
Because I think everybody only listened to the beginning of the song, you know. Yeah, I got that swag.
Nobody. when you came up with something with the cast that was putting this stuff out, I mean, it was just in the flow of stuff. We had a very laid back feel to stuff. Even you start talking about stuff like the ATL stomp. If you're not from Atlanta, you don't know. There's no such thing as an ATL stomp. It was originally the East Side stomp. Okay, mm-hmm. And we used to do it at parties well before you start having Atlanta. Your boy, Lil John. Right, him come on these videos and start talking about the ATL stomp. No, it wasn't no ATL stomp. It was the East Side stomp originally, and folks from the East Side know this about that. Quote me on that.
All right, give us that Atlanta history.
There you go.
But you know what? Actually, that takes us into what I want to start us talking about. Which is because, you know, the Lil John, that whole East Side and ATL stomp, right. Stuff like that,
right.
That brought me into college.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
I wanted to touch on HBCUs because, you know, like that's a, well, I know on my social media, what I follow a lot of Black stuff and HBCU stuff because I went to a HBCU. I see the benefit of it and I think it's important to have it. Right. But I wanted us to, you know, touch on that, you know, like what's the importance of it? What's your experience? I want to start with you. What do you feel the importance of HBCU life is? And tell us about your experience at an HBCU.
Oh, man.
Your experience is probably totally different than mine because you were surrounded by other HBCUs.
This
you
is know, true.
In a large area.
Yes. So it was basically like a network of HBCUs, you know. And right. The first thing that I remember, you know, in going, you know, and applying at the school, you know, me and a Morehouse College alumni, it was a guy who was actually. When I first got in, I was applying for a scholarship and I went in and interviewed and all that kind of stuff. And there was a guy who was coming out and we were just talking. He was just like, hey, man, you know, I'm here, you know, because I had to get my ammunition to go out in this world. And at the time, I did not understand what he meant. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it was a thing of like, OK, I hear you, brother, but I'm just starting here. Right. I'm just trying to get in here. But as I'm. And, you know, went through all the things that I went through at Morehouse and on all that kind of stuff. I understood what he meant. And just the solidarity that you get as a Black man, being amongst other Black men who are aspiring and trying to change this narrative of who we are and how we're being viewed and the things that we want to succeed and aspire to, it really gave me a lot of root in myself to then go out and to do further things, whether that's the grad school, you know, going to another place with that and everything else. But for me, it was, you know, when I look back on it, it was such an empowering experience. It was such an experience of solidarity and getting to know. I think that's a misnomer, too. But, you know, sometimes Black people are looked at as this homogenous group. We're very heterogeneous. And I'm not just saying that from a sense of where you're talking about, you know, groups, you know, who may be from the Caribbean or coming from Africa. I'm talking about people who are right here smack dab in the US of A. We're very heterogeneous about ourselves and our cultures and our approaches and our minds and how we feel about stuff. And it was such an enriching environment for me to have that and then to go further on. It just has a place dear in my heart. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think what you said was that bringing that because we're all so different is what makes the experience, the HBCU experience, I think so much better. You know, I'm a big advocate for attending HBCUs. Mm-hmm. I had only planned on going to an HBCU because of A Different World.
Mm-hmm.
Like I saw the TV show and that made me like, I was like, oh, that's a cool place. And then at the same time, my sisters also went to Benedict College.
Yes.
And so when we went to like their homecoming, it reminded me of Hillman.
Correct.
Like everything that they were doing. And I was like, this is just like the TV show. It seems so funny. Right. And that was why I wanted to go to college. It wasn't until I got to college, you know, I mean, I had a collegiate experience and things like that, but it wasn't until probably I started to get into my core classes and graduate and become an adult that I realized like all the lessons that I learned and how beneficial it was for me, because I just remember coming from my small town. Yeah. I was always the smart kid.
Right.
And, you know, like that can be kind of, you know, isolating when you're like the smart boy and there's no other like real like people who kind of like get you.
Right.
So to speak. But then you go to college and you see other black people, other black guys who are just like you.
Yeah.
But they're from Kentucky.
Yeah, absolutely. Virgin Islands, absolutely.
Africa. You know, they're from all, and they, so they have so much other stuff to bring, but you see like that kind of connection.
Right.
And I got that at an HBCU, and then we all had like the same goal.
Right.
Because the, I think what you get at an HBCU that you won't get at a PWI is the family element.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm willing to go out on a limb and say any, you know, we have our drawbacks at the HBCU.
Correct.
We can be a little hood and the way that people, the way that we conduct business.
Antiquated,
but,
right.
Yes. Yes. But, but, you know, the thing is, you'll always have that professor or that advisor or someone that cares just like they're your family member.
Correct.
And tries to make sure that you're doing what it is you're supposed to do. I remember he actually went to Morehouse, but he was my college advisor, well, for my freshman year.
Right.
But he was very big on, like, the black male educating the black male, making sure black males were, you know, like, together and stuck together.
Right.
And so I appreciated that. But he was part of the reason I actually graduated early, because I was taking classes, you know, going through, signing up for classes. And he looked at my schedule. He said, why aren't you taking like a world lit class? And he told me about taking, like, he loaded my schedule up. And I didn't know I could because it was a sophomore class.
Right.
He was like, who told you you couldn't?
Right.
For him to even tell me, like, don't let someone else tell you what you can or cannot do.
Absolutely.
That stuck with me to this day. Like, and that actually helped me graduate early because of that one little class. It like kept putting me ahead.
Wow.
So, you know, like stuff like that, you won't get that. Like I went to grad school at a white school.
Yeah, right. As did I.
You definitely don't. Like, granted, I was a whole adult.
Right,
but
right.
It still wasn't the same experience, I'm pretty sure, because I, you know, you were right down the street from Georgia Tech, right. Georgia State.
Right.
I was right down the street from University of South Carolina. Right. And I just remember them trying to emulate what we were doing.
Sure.
And, you know, they kind of looked down on us because we were the black school.
Sure.
And we're not as good as them, but they always try to have like step shows like us or parties like us. So, you know, events, but it just doesn't replicate what the black experience does.
I agree. And what, and what I'll say about that is because, you know, Morehouse has looked at, you know, it's a different light here in Atlanta. Because you had your Georgia Techs and Georgia States of the world, but we still had our level of prestige because of the guys, the juggernauts who had came out of Morehouse. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, you came in with that, and maybe that was a little pressure, maybe it wasn't, but you know, there was kind of the lure of being able to go there and that kind of thing. But you had that, but I also can remember. I mean, of course, you know. You know, Morehouse, you know, is a liberal arts school. So as opposed to maybe going somewhere like a Georgia Tech where you specifically focused on something like mechanical engineering or something or you know, something in that sense, the liberal arts was the thing of, and people who've been to liberal arts, you understand this, like you had a variety of things that you got into. You did neuroscience and you did all kinds of philosophy. And you did sociology.
I'm in a religion class, but I'm an education major.
That's what I'm hey, you got all of these little dibbles and dabbles, and you had all these professors that just had their own little niches and things like that. And then at some point you brought it all together in this network of understanding the tapestry of life and reality. You know what I'm saying?
And I think that's what you said, the network. That brings me to the like the big point I want to make is that I think this is why HBCUs should be treasured, because it is a huge network.
Absolutely.
I look at like
all day
how like if you well here in Atlanta, I know like pretty much every black person that lives here has gone to an HBCU.
Yeah.
And just the simple fact of knowing that you went to an HBCU networks you with them because we all have something in common. Me and you went to two totally different schools.
Right.
But we may have similar experiences. And, you know, those things kind of bring us together, which help you network. Because,
right.
And that was something that we learned really quickly.
Right.
I know for me at Benedict, I learned that very quickly.
Right.
The power of networking mm-hmm. and getting out there, getting your putting your best foot forward.
Right.
You know, making sure that you look your best, you speak your best.
Absolutely.
You know, and just do what it is. Whereas I don't think, like, yeah, you learn networking at the other schools.
Right.
But the close knitness.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, most HBCUs are not large schools.
They're not.
No, you're not going to have 30, 40,000 kids at those schools.
Right.
Everybody's going to know everybody.
Right.
For the most part, which means, you know, 5, 10 years down the line, y'all come back for homecoming. That's a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
You come back, man. Everybody knows everybody.
There you go.
You know?
Yeah.
Although COVID is messing that up and we're not having a homecoming this year because COVID decided to just cancel everything under the sun.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, that's...
And that is what it is. You know, I can remember even, you know, some of the partying I've done. And I can tell you, I've been spoiled by it. You know what I'm saying? Woo! And people will tell you during that time, you've been spoiled by it. But I can remember going to some of the parties and, you know, like I say, you dance and, you know, you drinking and, you know, doing other things, right? But I can remember on various occasions, you know, where at the end of the night, you know, it would be a group of us, you know what I'm saying? It'd be men and women, you know, and we would just be building. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
We would sit there 3 and 4 in the morning and we're talking about social issues. We're talking about, the plight of the black man, the black woman and what needs to happen, you know, for equality and those kinds of things in the world. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And those kind of conversations were consistent. And that to me was just like the linchpin in how different to me this kind of experience would be from maybe doing or going somewhere else. Like you said, the close-knitness
right.
and just the fact that everyone had, you know, something invested in that. You know what I'm saying? Because everyone wanted to see, you know, everyone do well in a sense. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I came here for something, so you came here for something. Like,
yeah.
We all came here
yeah.
for something.
Absolutely.
And when, you know, and of course you had, you know, your outliers who probably were just there to, you know, mess around.
Correct.
But, for the most part, I know for me, I ended up hanging around the people who wanted to do something with their life. You know, like we partied. We partied like crazy, especially when I crossed and became a Kappa. We partied like crazy. But we all had a common goal, which was, you know, not only to graduate,
yeah.
but, you know, to be successful.
Absolutely.
And I think that was always very interesting to be, you know, after, you know, a night of drinking or
right.
partying extremely hard,
right.
you know, you driving back, but then you
right.
remember the conversations about
right.
learning about somebody's life and
right.
their upbringing.
Absolutely.
You know, what they came from or the stuff that goes on in their city, in their town.
Right.
You know, having those experiences, you're not going to get any place else. And I'm loving the way that, like, you see, like, the big push for HBCUs now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm loving that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to continue.
Right.
It's just that, you know, I know it's so hard for funding to, you know, everybody can't be a Morehouse and get $80 million every 2 years from everybody.
Yeah, you still paying them student loans on that thing. Hey, so, listen.
But I definitely feel that it should, they're definitely a national treasure.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I would like, if once all this stuff kind of calms down, to really see, like, it to become a resurgence with that whole HBCU life and really building it back up because, you know, now the older alumni are kind of, you know, fading out and we're
right.
becoming the older alumni.
Correct.
So I think it's up to us to make sure that that legacy still is upheld and,
right.
and, you know, you bring in a newer generation to kind of take our spots.
Yes.
Once we get too old.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hopefully that can that'll work out.
Yeah, HBCUs have been the lifeblood, you know, for you know, Black Americans and you know, for a while, and maybe even more specifically, you know, in the South. You know what I'm saying? And whereas we've had to do more with less, you know, if you start talking about funding, if you start talking about facilities and things like that, you know, it could be a blessing in disguise, you know, in terms of maybe not having the distractions that you would have maybe somewhere else that you could focus on, like the familial aspect of it, you know, investing in that kinship and that network, you know, that at some point, again, it's a lifeblood for, you know, whatever that's going on today. And it wouldn't surprise me at all at this point to see a resurgence of, you know, these universities. I mean, if you look at now, there's some prominent cats out right now, men and women, that are doing their jobs wonderfully, you know what I'm saying, in the action of promoting self-determination, you know what I'm saying, for non-white individuals, non-white peoples, non-white collectives, you know what I'm saying? And to me, that energy, that force comes out of those experiences that you have at those HBCUs. Yeah, you come in already a particular kind of person when you come into those, but they transform you. They shift you a particular way to prepare you to go out into that limelight and have enough root in yourself and confidence in yourself to, you know, to be empowered or to empower our agenda. Absolutely.
I agree. So that brings us to our next point, which I want to talk about. He didn't go to an HBCU, but he is my fraternity brother.
Yeah, he is.
And he has made a lot of news over the last few years. And that is Mr. Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
You know, lately he's been getting a lot of press.
Right.
About, you know, since everything has happened and transpired over the last month or so, couple of months, is that, you know, he was right. And maybe he should get another chance.
Right.
You even had, you know, those people's president say that, you know, hey, if he is good and capable enough, sure, give him a chance.
Sure.
Although he pretty much said, you know, because he disrespected the flag, he shouldn't have a chance. But now he changed it soon.
Right.
What are your thoughts on him and kind of where you stand on, I guess, his issues?
Well, it's a hodgepodge of things. I mean, we can look at, you know, maybe his background, you know, maybe he, you know, came from an environment that, you know, maybe wasn't necessarily impoverished or, you know, that kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, it is what it is on top of that. Here's what I'll say to that, though. However you can be a person or a symbol or a nodal point for change or empowerment, I'm all for that. You know, you know what I'm saying? Whatever it has to happen, however it got to happen, that's what's happening. And I'm all for it. You know what I'm saying? He was someone when it wasn't, you know, politically popular, or, you know, at least with a group of people, you know what I'm saying, for him to kneel and say, hey, I'm not for this, I'm not for that. He was a person that bared the brunt of all of that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that could be from white folks and non-white folks altogether. You know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, he was someone who persevered through all of that and now is looked at someone who, to some degree, has championed that cause. Now, something that people can say, oh, well, he never grew up in this, you know, environment or that environment or whatever, or never had to deal with this or deal with that. But I'm beyond all of that, ladies and gentlemen. And my point is this: however the agenda needs to be pushed is however the agenda needs to be pushed. And if that agenda needs to be pushed with someone who's not from your particular background, so be it.
Right. You know what I mean? I'm all for, you know, the agenda being pushed. But, this could probably be unpopular opinion, you know, with everyone that keeps saying that, oh, give him another shot. Let that man play. At this point, I'm like, he good where he is, because I don't see the benefit of him playing. Like, you were doing, keep doing the work that you're doing. Clearly, you're paid and you're making some type of money that allows you to not work.
Right.
So whatever you're doing, continue to do it. You playing football for a few minutes out of the day is not going to make or break the cause.
I hear what
you know, he's fighting for a certain cause, and I'm like, let him continue doing
that. I hear what you're saying, but here's my thing is, he's still a person, and he still may have football aspirations. Who knows if he wants to win a Super Bowl? You know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying, and I'm not saying that that should be separate from his other obligations or things he wants to promote. You understand what I'm saying? But let's look at a person in their fullness. Like, he still may, with all of the civil rights and social justice obligations that he has, he may still be a person that says, you know what? I still want to fucking win a Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying? Or play in the league. You know what I'm saying? So I think that in that sense, hey, expand yourself to whatever horizons you want to expand yourself to. Who knows in him getting back in the league how much of a force that he becomes when he goes and plays against different teams or on the team that he plays on and the community that they're in. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
I just think that, you know, the mind continues to need to be open to whatever possibilities that come about from, you know, even him getting back into, you know, the NFL, you know, in that capacity. You know what I'm saying?
Right. That, you make a very, very, very valid point. Mm-hmm. I'm still of the belief, my brother, I need you to have a seat. You did good. You did good. You know, we are about achievement. He achieved. And, you know, no, he didn't get the ring. But, hey, man, you came in. You made a statement. Yeah. You played your heart out. Yeah. You showed who you are. We know you good. Go out. You went out on top. I feel. You know what? And let's just stay that way.
Yeah.
Let it go. Let it go.
Yeah.
You know, that's just how I feel. You know, mm-hmm. But hey, again, I am only one person.
And I hear what you're saying. I think of Colin Kaepernick, then I think of someone like a LeBron James, you know, who comes out of Ohio, which is another area that, you know, has some racial things going on, you know what I'm saying, in terms right. of impoverishment or inequalities and that kind of thing. And his NBA status and being an NBA champion and winning in the way that he did with the Cleveland Cavaliers from a 3-1 down to probably one of the top 10 teams of all time in the NBA against the Golden State Warriors, I think brings a certain respect back to Cleveland. And now he can capitalize on that and say, okay, I also want to push this social justice agenda here. I also want to make these schools here, you know, and pay for kids to go to college tuition free if they succeed academically. You know what I'm saying? Off the strength of and in combination of some of the things that I've done in the NBA. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying right. that is his only platform, but I'm saying it also helps to that to the fact that he succeeded in the NBA, and that translate over to his social justice objectives and goals that he may want to pursue as well. Kind of a entangled collective, if you have.
Yeah, you know what I mean. I can see that. I can definitely see that. Yeah. I don't know. I think Colin is kind of the same, but a little different. And I mean, for me, I just feel like, you know, I love the work that he's done. And let's just keep you doing some work.
I hear that. And I got you. I just wonder, who is Colin Kaepernick? You understand what I'm saying? Like, I mean, I see him kneeling. I've heard him, you know, converse, you know, on a few occasions. But I don't really know that in terms of, like, him speaking or him writing a book or anything like that, that I really have a real insight to who he is.
And see, we need him to say that instead of getting out on the football field trying to throw 50-yard passes and run down the sideline. Well, like, that's what we need to hear his voice, you know?
I hear you, but sometimes throwing the football and running down the sideline helps you to formulate ideas and do the other part, which to me, like I said, it's an entangled process. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess.
I'm just saying. You know, I'm just saying.
I guess, yeah. Colin, we can hopefully. Well, I do hope it works out mm-hmm. for him. I hope you know he gets success in whatever he right. does. But you know, I can deal without him playing. You know, for me. And
I'd like to see what he got back in the tank. I want to know what he got. I mean, I'm a football guy. You know, I'd like to see what he has mm-hmm. in the tank. you know, personally. I like, what you got in the tank still? I mean, you've done these workouts and all this other stuff. Like, you know, get signed with a team. I want to know what you can do. I want to know what you can do. You know, like, to me, like I said, it's a whole picture thing. It's a phenomena of Kaepernick. And that just, you know what I mean?
The reason, I guess, I mean, everybody wants to see what he do, but see, I guess me, I'm just a little bit scary because I wouldn't want him to come in and he just tanks. And, you know, and it's like, damn, we waited for this? You know? Well, whereas, like, you know, but before he got benched, he was on top. So that's what we know.
Well, I mean, even
you come back now and, like, you know, the game, like, he was a runner.
Yeah.
And the game has kind of transitioned to being a running quarterback. But
kind of, sort of.
These quarterbacks now are legit, like, linebackers.
Yeah. You look at the Pat Mahomes of the world, and you understand now that I think the position is evolving into someone who not only is mobile in a very discerning, intellectual kind of way, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But also, you know, someone who can throw the football and can throw the football right. With accuracy, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, Kaepernick, you know, be it that he stayed in the league, he could have been the face of that, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, and I don't take anything away from him doing what he had to do or being excommunicated from the league to prove a point. I don't take anything away from that at all, you know what I'm saying? But my thing is, as a full person, you know what I'm saying? We could talk about civil rights and that kind of thing, but a full person is like, yeah, I do that. But then I also got into the league because I like football. You know what I'm saying? And I want to be successful and succeed at football. So what comes of it from that? And then what kinds of things entangle with each other, you know, in terms of the football thing and the social justice thing or whatever, that can kind of empower and promote each other. You know what I'm saying? We don't know what that, we don't necessarily know what that looks like. It would be intriguing to see that in a year such as 2020, where we've had this transformative period, because to me, that's what it is. We are transforming into something that we don't know what yet America looks like yet. You know what I'm saying? And he's been a catalyst for it, whether we realize it at the time or not. He is that guy, you know, and I just think, you know, hey, do you and do what comes to you, you know, do what, you know, opportunities come to you as well, you know, something in that regard.
I can see that. I can see that. All right. So in keeping up with the spirit of doing it for the culture, we talked about our HBCU experience and Mr. Kaepernick. Now I want us to kind of finish off with something a little lighter. I want us to go back and think about either your favorite, your top. You can do top five, top four, three, two, whatever. Top TV shows and top or top movies.
Okay. So
what are you thinking?
Okay, so I'm gonna talk about a top two, and one out of the two.
Top two what?
Top two movies.
Okay.
Okay. Now one out of the two. Most people will look at it as a just kind of a sci-fi flick. I don't look at it as such. I look at it as a black movie masquerading as a sci-fi flick. Okay. So my top number one flick is The Spook Who Sat by the Door.
Wait, what?
Oh, yeah, buddy. Okay. This is something, obviously, you're going to have to look up. There's a movie that was
clearly okay. I thought you were going to say Tales from the
Hood.
Oh,
no.
Or Death by Temptation.
No, sir. And people who listen to this podcast who know what The Spook Who Sat by the Door is, you putting the fist.
The Spook Who Sat by the Door?
You putting the fist up in the air right now because you know what I'm talking about.
So, wait a minute. Why did all I type in was The Spook and it came
up? Oh, I know. Because it's that kind of movie. It's that kind of movie, okay? This movie was made in the early 70s. And basically, it was a movie about a guy who, through luck and some other things, got into the FBI, learned all of the things about the CIA, FBI, one of those. I think it was CIA.
The CIA. It says dramatized the CIA's history.
Right, the CIA. Okay. And he had a black man who got into it, learned all of the tactics, and then went back to the hood and taught the teenagers the same things. And led a revolutionary army against injustice and promoting a black agenda. Now, now this movie back in the 70s was out. I mean, they didn't want to show it. Okay? This was a movie that was just like, hey, this is before the times. They don't want to show it, whatever, whatever. But it's a favorite of mine because it shows the multidimensionality of the main character, in that he wasn't just this protagonist character. He was someone who wasn't this straight guy. He had some flaws, which to me labels him as a human person. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That is relatable. But basically, like I said, that was what the movie was about. That's my first movie. The second movie is Dune. Now, you know,
man, you went deep, like, man, you just give me all types of Dune.
Yes, no, Dune, D-U-N-E, like sand dunes. Okay, so Dune. So Dune was an early 80s movie. You had all these different planets in the universe, and you had a group that lived on an arid desert called the Fremen, i.e. Freeman, that were waiting for a kind of a messiah-like leader to come and lead them out of darkness and to lead them against all these powers that were taking a lot of their things that they held dear in the planet. You know, they'd be talking about spice and that kind of stuff or whatever.
So are they remaking
this movie? They are remaking this movie. They were making it towards the end of the year.
Because I see they got a 2020 movie. Correct. With Zendaya.
Correct. They are. Okay. Now, when you look at the old 1980s versions, one thing that you see that's very explicit is when they're in the desert, they wear these black suits. They wear these black suits. And one thing about the black suits can pretty much sustain life for several months in the desert. The black suits, they can pump water through the suit so that you have moisture and have hydration. You know what I'm saying? If you have to get rid of waste, it processes those wastes and recycles them to whereas you have things like I said, good water and that kind of stuff. The bottom line is to me, the story talks more about not necessarily the people that were playing the roles, but about, okay, this is an arid desert. It talks to me more about places like Egypt. You know what I'm saying? We had this black suit representative of black people that at one point you'll see research like they're doing now and getting back to their level of kingdomship and queenship on the planet.
Look, you all, man, you done got deep as hell. look. My God. Like, I'm sitting here like, look, first off, I can do movies, but then, like, I don't know, my attention span will go, like, real quick.
Yes.
And because of the internet, like, I will Wikipedia a movie in a second while I'm in the theater.
Right.
And read about the movie while I'm watching the movie, just so I can figure out what the end of it is.
Gotcha.
In it. So that like, I still want to watch it, but I don't know. I can do quick stuff. So that's why I was going to pick two.
Okay.
Like, mine are totally on the totally opposite spectrum.
Okay.
Of it. Like, my top, it's a tie, I guess. My top two would definitely be Living Single and Martin.
Now,
like, those were the top shows.
Now they have a place in my heart too. Now, don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
they have a place in my heart as well. Definitely,
those are my top like two. Like, A Different World was cool, yeah, but only a couple of episodes.
Right.
But like, as far as like shows that like I definitely had to like.
Yes.
I even Martin, like, Martin like with that show. This about to sound real nerdy, but I used to imagine that I had like a guest role or Martin or Living Single as like nephew or a brother
right.
of them
right.
and would like be a part of the cast. Right. Like, I just love the show that
right.
I wanted to be
I hear you.
In the cast.
I hear you. If I talked about a show, Martin would definitely be top two or three. It was a show that I think that during our time kind of molded us. I think we even have in our personality some of the things Martin did in that show. Just about that
all
crazy.
The time.
You know what I mean?
All the time, mm-hmm. like even in college, mm-hmm. I would drive people around, and if you got on my nerves, I would kick you out of my car. Like, it was like real quick. Like, you get out of my car. Like, I don't care how you get on. Get out of my car. You're not driving.
Right.
Get out.
Right.
Get out. But you know, that was always a big thing. But then, like, the whole Living Single part, that was a big thing too, just because I don't know. I just remember being young, but seeing black people live in New York, like in a place like that. Like, at first, I remember thinking that couldn't be real. Like, what kind of black people live in a two-story apartment in New York City?
Right.
And then, you know, but as I got older, I'm like, well, it could be kind of realistic because you got one girl that's like over a whole magazine. So she kind of got the capital to like stay in an apartment. Then you got two other people that can help her out.
Right.
And then you got a guy. So, you know, you got your people that can help out.
They had some money now. They had some jobs that I mean, in New York, they was getting money. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, they were, you know, like, you know, Kyle was a stockbroker, but then But as an adult, I even like dive deeper into it. Now, like, why the hell Kyle needed a roommate?
Yeah, this is
true. And he was a whole stockbroker.
This is true.
Like,
this is true.
You know, Maxine could live by herself.
Yeah, exactly. But she chose not to.
Like, Maxine lived all the way by herself, and like everybody else had roommates.
And she was always over there, though. So again, it turns into that kinship thing again, where let's come through. What you doing? I'm walking in when I get ready. We're gonna talk and joke.
Yeah.
Like that's just our culture. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And it put on display like our culture and like how we, you know, some things that we've taken with us, you know, to say, okay, this is how I wanna live. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that was like I would say those two were definitely my top two. And then following close to that, because like it was like you know, like back in like the 90s, 2000s, like there just was a strong presence of black shows.
Yeah,
like,
it was.
You know, like it was that. And then The Game.
Yeah.
That used to come
I remember that. Yeah.
That was a big show for me.
It was.
As well as Moesha.
Yeah, it was.
Those shows as well. Were like shows, but like my top two.
Yeah.
I would definitely say, like, I actually bought DVDs and would like still watch them and like love to watch them to this day. Mm-hmm. Martin and Living Single. So yeah, I appreciate stuff like
definitely.
That. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. So all right, that was pretty good.
Yeah,
I enjoyed today. I think that was a good way to come back.
Definitely.
After a brief hiatus.
There you go.
All right. So I hope you guys enjoyed today's show. And that you got something from it that you were able to kind of reminisce and think back to some of your favorite times or things that you really liked as well. Mm-hmm. And please be sure to let us know what you think. You can hit us up on email at thebrokecomeup@gmail.com or following us on IG at thebrokecomeup. And again, this is Marquise. And
this is Marcus here. Holla at you.
Right. Saying follow your dreams, dance like no one is watching, and hustle till you can't hustle no more.
For sure.
Peace.
Peace out.